Comencem avui amb la presència de l'Andrew Lovett. L'Andrew és el director del Black Country Living Museum, a prop de Birmingham, al Regne Unit, i a més és vicepresident de l'Associació de Museus Independents a Gran Bretanya. És una entitat que aplega uns 1.200 museus independents que tenen tots ells molta vinculació amb les seves comunitats. L'Andrew ens presentarà un estudi que va ser encarregat per la pròpia associació i a l'Arts Council of England sobre l'impacte de cobrar o no cobrar entrada als museus i l'impacte que té aquest fet a la freqüentació. Aquest estudi es va fer entre al voltant de 300 museus i es van analitzar casos específics d'alguns museus que van passar de cobrar a no cobrar i viceversa, que eren gratuïts i van passar a cobrar. I l'Andrew ens presentarà les conclusions de l'estudi.
Thank you. Can you all hear me? Yes. Muchas gracias. Hola. It's lovely to be in Barcelona. It's a great shame though that I've just flown in and I fly straight out again. I've been to three conferences in the last 6 weeks in Denmark, in Poland, and now in Barcelona, and quite a lot of English, British people have been with me on these conferences, and you can always tell over these last 6 weeks the British people, because we're all checking our news from home to see whether we have a country when we get back or whether the borders have been closed. So maybe it's a good thing that I fly out straight away. It's lovely to be in a contemporary arts institution. I started some of my work running a contemporary art gallery in England, so it feels very, very welcoming to be here, and I'm very grateful for the invitation to speak at your conference. I just hope that I'm able, really, to add to your debate and to help you address the issues which you are facing and which we've heard a little about this morning. It doesn't surprise me, I suppose, that this issue of charging or not charging is controversial, because it is also controversial in the UK, but not with me. So before I tell you a little bit about the research that was done in the UK, let me just give you a little bit of background about myself and about my museum and about the context and the picture in the UK. First of all, about myself. So I am not only the vice president of the UK's largest museum membership organization, I am a director of a museum as well. So I have a very vested interest in what is going on and a very practical interest in what is going on. What I find when I talk, particularly in continental Europe, is that the idea of independent museums can be a little strange and is not that well known. But my museum is what we would call independent. So we don't receive money from the state or from local government. And we charge quite a lot. And yet we are also in one of the most deprived areas in the UK, with high unemployment, low educational attainment, low wages, and yet attendance at my museum is going up and up and up. Independent museums in the UK really started to flourish about 45, 50 years ago. And they were described at the time as coming out of the primordial soup. Do you understand that phrase? So they weren't the nationals. They were often started by individuals who cared deeply about their history and their heritage on their doorstep. And they could see that changes meant that that history, those traditions, were being lost. And they wanted to do something about it. And so they took matters into their own hands. And today, we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of independent museums in the UK. In fact, far more independent museums than those that you might call, I guess, state museums or subsidised museums. For us at my museum, we do charge, and I employ a lot of staff. I employ nearly 300 people, and we make surpluses, we make profits, and we only do that by charging. So typically we might make a profit or a surplus of £1 million a year, and we can invest that. That's what it means. We can invest that back into the museum, into the staff, and create a better museum, really. The wider picture in the UK is very complex. So we have a broad range, as many of you will know, of national museums, mainly centred in London, but not entirely. And they are free. They have been free since 1996, when the incoming Labour government of Tony Blair introduced free admission for the national museums. And yet the debate about charging or not continues to rage, I think, largely because since about 2008, the amount of investment from government, from taxpayers, has declined. And all the time, the national museums are very aware of this. They often have enormous collections, enormous buildings, huge issues around storage and conservation. And they're looking to diversify how they earn their money. And so the idea of charging rears its head. And you're probably aware that many of the nationals, particularly organisations like the Victoria and Albert Museum, for example, charge for special exhibitions, big blockbuster special exhibitions, and they're hugely popular, which I think is a little bit ironic, really. And then we have a number of local museums run maybe by the local government with considerable subsidy, and they face much the same issue. Even though many of them do actually charge, although quite modestly, I would say, but they have the same problems, and we have an issue in the UK, which we've described as hollowing out, where a museum that is seeing a reducing subsidy, having to reduce its staff, reduce its professional staff, often curators or educational staff. And the organization is kind of hollowed out. Everything looks normal. The doors are open. Visitors come in. But actually, the kind of soul of an organization has often been diminished. I wouldn't say that that is the case for the independent museums in the UK. And I would say that they are flourishing. And actually, they relish the challenge. And I think for a number of reasons, really. One is they don't think they have a right to exist. I'm going to say that again. They don't think they have a right to exist. So they work to add value and to be valued by people. And they see issues as challenges, as problems to be solved, because ultimately they feel that what they do is of value to people, but they absolutely don't feel they have a right to exist. I'm going to go through a little bit of the aims of the research. Oh. So we, at the Association of Independent Museums, does this work as well? Oh, yes, I can walk about. That's great. So the aims of the research were quite simple, really. It was commissioned by ourselves, the Association of Independent Museums, the Arts Council of England, which is a big funder of non-national museums in the UK, in England, and actually the Welsh government as well. And a lot of it was to do with this idea that if you charge, you won't get a diverse audience. You won't attract people with less money, with less education, less propensity, we would say, to visit. And we wanted to be able to examine that and research on it. We wanted to look at the impact on visitor numbers, on visitor attendance, to see how that impacted. We wanted to look at secondary spending. So in shops, cafes, restaurants, was there an impact on that? And also on the reputation with the museum. Because although many of them are private and so forth, we have stakeholders and the community, and that's important to museums. And we wanted to share the lessons, which is why I'm here today. So I'll just run through a few of the key findings of the research. I'll speak so you don't have to read the English. The most interesting thing was there was a perception, I think, in the UK that if you're an independent museum, i.e. you didn't get a subsidy, you charged. But that's not the case. There was also a perception that if you were subsidized, if you were a local government organization or a national museum, you were free. Apart from the nationals, it wasn't the case. It was much, much more complex. And there are many, many local government museums that charge. There are many independent museums that are free. And so it was a very complex picture, much more nuanced than we thought. And that was important to understand. Maybe number two is the most important thing for you guys. But we found there was actually no direct link between charging and the diversity of the audience. My museum near Birmingham, in the central part of England, is in a very deprived area. And the mix of audience that we get is very, very broad. It's very untypical of museums. I can remember when I was running a contemporary art gallery near Newcastle in England, our audience, 80% of our audience was fairly well off, fairly well educated, fairly well aware of what they were coming to see. They had a lot of prior knowledge. But it's not the case generally for museums that are charging. It's certainly, there are lots and lots of examples in the UK where charging doesn't seem to have an impact on who your audience is and how diverse it is. It doesn't seem to be a barrier. That isn't the single barrier. You know, when the UK government introduced free admission to the National Museums in 1996, it was expected that the audience would become much more diverse. It didn't happen. Two things happened. One, the same people came, but they stayed shorter time, and they kept coming back. But diversity hasn't happened, really. And the price alone wasn't the barrier. And I find this in my own museum, and it's about how you engage with people, how you engage about their history and make it interesting. I often say that one of the most important characteristics that as a leader of a museum we have to show is to be creative in how we deal and engage with people. And if you don't do that, that is the biggest barrier, really. Donations, more affected again by other factors than whether you charge or not. In the UK, it is very, very difficult to get donations to run your museum. And I'm sure that must be the same in Spain, in Barcelona. But you can obviously get money for capital and projects. We found there were lots of other factors. And it's the biggest factor is about whether people feel the museum is valued and that they feel valued and that they've got a connection. And often a long-term relationship. And if you can build a long-term relationship with visitors, then donations will follow. Secondary spend. So that is, again, about money that's coming into your shops, your cafes. We do a lot of filming at the museum. So that's another kind of secondary spend. And it's hugely important for many, many museums in the UK, including my own, which probably makes about 40% of its income from secondary spending. But again, there was no direct link between whether you charge or whether you didn't charge on the levels of secondary spend. And that wouldn't be a surprise to me. It's about the offer. It's about the quality of what you do, surely. It's not going to be about whether people charge or not. I think this is interesting. Dwell times were typically longer for museums that charge. It's hardly a revelation, that, is it, really? We've seen dwell times go up and up. Because I think that's important when you're charging. And people often say to me, how much should I charge? We're thinking about charging. How much should we charge? And I often say to people, how long will people stay? And if you've got a good idea about that, that's a very good indicator as to how much you could charge, really. But I want people to stay as long as they possibly can at my museum and at museums that charge. Because the longer they stay and you've charged them, the greater the value that you're offering to them, the greater sense of value for money that you are offering. So actually dwell time is hugely, hugely important. And I think the statistics, the data that came out of when the national museums in the UK went free, that dwell times went down, people just popped in and went out again. Again, it cannot be surprising, really. And I do that myself, and I'm sure you do as well. It's the pattern of how we are. I think that the last point on the key factors, the key findings, is important, really. We want a relationship with our visitors. And we try, and I think the trick is to try to turn a financial transaction into an emotional one, where people actually don't resent charging because they feel they're getting value. And we want a relationship with our visitors. We want to know about them. And we collect a lot of data. And the research found that actually when you charge, it kind of creates a focal point for that. I think in some ways, I find it a bit scary. Sometimes we do so much market research and segmentation of audiences. Sometimes I think we've got a drone over every single person. And we know exactly what you had for breakfast and what newspaper you read and what car you drive and where your children go to school. We're stalking everybody, really. But that process of charging creates a focal point to collect data about people and create this long-term relationship. The last key finding about if you are going to change what you do, if you're going to go from free to charging or charging to free, think about it carefully. And communicate it and be very clear as to why you're doing it, really. But in many ways, you know, I found the whole question of charging a strange one, because certainly I feel closer to being a cultural or a heritage entrepreneur than I do to a museum director. And we often talk about my museum and independent museums in the UK as being heritage businesses, not heritage services. And we think in that way because it puts the visitor in charge. It puts the visitor at the absolute forefront of everything you do. We often in the UK, where we are charging, think of a Venn diagram, you know? You're familiar with the Venn diagram. And so you might often have three parts to that. One would be being a museum. So that's about having a collection, using it to tell stories. But also as a charity or a foundation. And I say that because that's important, because there's an obligation to have public benefit. Many, many of the museums, overwhelmingly I would say, the museums in the UK are essentially private foundations or private charities. But they don't have shareholders. We don't give dividends. The shareholders are the public, the visitors. And so there's an obligation to give back a public benefit. So that's the second of the Venn diagram. But the third one is about being a visitor attraction. So that's very much about putting the people again at the heart of it. And thinking carefully about how we communicate and creating an enjoyment. We don't talk about enjoyment enough. It amuses us sometimes in the UK. There's a regulatory body of charities in the UK called the Charity Commission. And we often try and slip in the word enjoyment or enjoy to the reasons why the charity or the foundations exist. And sometimes the bureaucrats at the Charity Commission will strike it out. They'll strike out the word enjoyment or enjoy. Heaven knows why. But being that visitor attraction and creating empathy with visitors and reasons to visit and making it feel like you meant for me to come. You meant for me to be welcome here. And I think sometimes institutions that we're involved in unthinkingly don't think about the person so deeply enough. So our Venn diagram is museum, charity, visitor attraction. And there's a kind of sweet spot right in the middle. And if we can hit that, then we get success for our organization. So I don't think that in your deliberations that it is so much about an economic decision. I think it's about a philosophical one. I'm always struck by the words of Elaine Gurian, an American museum expert who we work with quite a lot back in the UK. And Elaine Gurian talks about policy and money are the same thing. If you make a decision about money, you're making a policy decision, and you can't separate the two. And so I think when you're thinking about charging or not, it is a policy decision. And I think it's a decision about what kind of organization you want to be. On my flight here, or in the airport in the UK, I tweeted that I was coming here and that I was going to talk to you about charging or not charging. But I said, actually, it's not really about that at all. It's about whether you want to be entrepreneurial. And are you ready to be entrepreneurial? Are you brave enough? And do you think it's the right thing? We get a lot of visitors, professional museum professionals, come to my museum. And they want to hear about us and what we do. And they're talking about whether they're going to start charging or earning more of their own money. And the first question I always ask them is, do you want to do it? Do you think it's the right thing to do? And some of them squirm and think, well, not really. It's a reluctance. And I say, well, don't do it. Find a different way. Don't try and do something that your heart's not in and that you don't feel is right. Maybe it's not right for your type of museum, for the community in which it exists. But don't do it if you don't want to do it. And I often say the real practical reason for that is that you, if you are good at something, you will enjoy it, and vice versa, really. So I think it's about what kind of organization you really want to create. And I think that's the kind of philosophical point that I would put. For us, it's the other word, and I've said it a few times, is about being independent, really. And I think if you are generating your own income and covering your own costs, you are independent. And for me and many like me in the UK, that allows us to be the best that we can be. It allows us to be the best that we can be. And we like it that way. But we rely still on public sector support. At my museum, and very, very few museums in the UK, independent museums, are creating surpluses. And they're certainly not creating surpluses where you could go to a bank. We're about to start spending about £25 million on the museum, on developing it. I couldn't go to my bank, the museum's bank, and say, can I borrow £25 million and I'll pay it back, etc. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. So we still rely for capital from the government, taxpayers. I keep saying to people, it's taxpayers. There's no such thing as government money. It's taxpayers' money. And lottery. I'm sure you have lottery in Spain, in Catalonia, in Spain. But the lottery in the UK has had a huge impact, massive impact, right across the United Kingdom on the infrastructure of museums, galleries, a whole host of things, and us included. But it's an investment by the people playing the lottery. So although we create enough money to cover our costs, because we charge, we rely on public sector money to be able to develop and make it even better. I often use the phrase to fulfill our potential, really. And often, you know, how are we doing for time, Antonia? How are we doing for time? Okay, 2 minutes? More. So what we find when we're talking to the public sector trying to get money for capital is they want to know that they're investing in an organization that is sustainable, that is going to be there for a long time, that is actually a business success. And it's interesting that we've just secured a lot of money from a particular kind of government agency that gives money to businesses to develop and grow and create jobs. And actually, they weren't the slightest bit interested in heritage or what heritage we might be saving. Not at all. What they were interested in was about job creation, about apprenticeships, about the economic impact, about changing perceptions of an area, of creating a tourist economy. So when we had to talk to those guys, they wanted to know that we were a flourishing business and that we knew our numbers and that we could forecast and that we were very comfortable with operating in a market. I think that's often the defining characteristic of when you charge, you truly operate in a market. You can't ignore it. So for that particular government agency, they were delighted to give us nearly £10 million towards our development because they felt it was a secure investment and that they were talking to people, they talked the same language and they were comfortable with that. And yet the irony is, and the strange thing is, then we talk to the lottery funders and they do care about the heritage that we are saving and the stories that we're going to tell. It's a completely different set of things that they're interested in. But we were able to do that as well. Because I haven't. Some of you might think I've sold my soul to the devil. But I haven't. I'm not, in itself, I am not interested in making money. I'm only interested in making money to invest in the museum and make the museum better and fulfill its potential. I've never had a normal job. And I've got three children, and they know I'm a director of a museum, but they don't really know what that means. They quite often ask me, what do you actually do? And I find that quite difficult to answer sometimes, actually. But I have no interest in simply making money, either for myself or for the organisation. It has to have a social purpose. And I think that's hugely important. So I don't think you should worry, for example, if you start to charge, that you are going to go to hell, that you're going to be ostracized by your colleagues. As long as you invest the money in a social purpose, in being a greatest museum you can be, the best charity you can be, but the best visitor attraction you can be as well. And I think provided you do that, you'll go to heaven. Okay. I'm going to stop there and invite questions. Is that a good idea, Antonia? Yeah. Okay. There must be questions. Okay, I won't be offended. I'll just check my phone that the borders haven't closed and that Boris hasn't done anything strange. No? Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. You're a very brave man using these words like business and entrepreneur. It's very interesting. My question was if you have any research about reducing the price, for example, for children so that families would come with some sort of reduced price. I know that doesn't go along with the philosophy of what you were explaining, but it's interesting to me to think about, do you have sort of promotions for family groups?
Okay. Yeah, I clearly have painted myself as the devil, haven't I? And I don't feel brave at all, you know, to use the words businesses and entrepreneur. I think that's not brave at all. But in direct response to your question, it's very familiar, and certainly at my museum and museums across the UK, that we have what we would call concessions and reduced prices and packages for families. And we're very conscious of that, really, because I come back to that phrase, we're operating in a market. And therefore, I need to be very aware of that. One of the most successful things, and this might be something for you to think about, if charging is a real no-no, what you might want to think about, and I press this point with government ministers in the UK, is about an annual pass. So if you come to my museum and many museums in the UK, and you just buy a single ticket for the day, you're actually buying an annual pass. So you could come back as many times as you like. Now, if you've flown in to Birmingham from Barcelona, then maybe you're not going to come very regularly. But if you are a local person to that museum, having an annual pass, which costs no more than a normal day ticket, that's of great value. And we see that has reached out to the community, is seen to be great value, and we get an enormous amount of repeat visitors coming. And it does that thing that I talked about. It creates a long-term relationship with your visitors. One of the most successful heritage conservation charities in Europe is based in the UK. It's called the National Trust. It has 5 million members. 5 million members. It has long-term relationships with those visitors. And they have essentially an annual membership scheme. And I think that's the way to go. And I press the point with government ministers about it in terms of the nationals. I'm told that to keep the nationals free, each year it costs about £500 million a year to allow the national museums in the UK to be free. I'd much prefer it and think it would be much more sensible if some of that was redistributed across the UK. But and having an annual pass for the nationals might be a stepping stone, actually, to being able for them to charge, to raise more of their own money, and to be able to look after themselves and be a bit more self-reliant, which I think is a good thing. So yes, we do. We're very conscious of it. Yes. Anything? Yes, gentleman there. Oh, no, he's doing his shopping.
Translation.
Yes, yes, yes.
Tenim la sensació...
Yeah. Simultaneous translations.
Okay, thank you. Sempre s'ha dit que l'entrada gratuïta als museus britànics nacionals va tenir un alt impacte a la botiga, a les botigues, i també s'ha dit sempre que les ornacines, les aquestes grans contenidors per acceptar donacions voluntàries han sigut molt importants. Fins i tot s'ha arribat a dir que les entrades no són gratuïtes, sinó que són voluntàries. L'entrada és voluntària, no gratuïta. La pregunta és, s'ha calibrat aquesta compensació a partir de les entrades voluntàries? Ha sigut realment elevada? Ha compensat? Amb quin tant per cent ha pogut compensar les entrades gratuïtes aquesta recaptació voluntària a partir d'aquestes ornacines que es posen en els museus nacionals britànics?
So there was two kind of questions there. The first one was easier than the next, I think. One was about the impact on the shops for nationals that are free. Yes, I think if you go into the shops of the British Museum or the Victoria and Albert or the Science Museum or Tate, they are flourishing. They're flourishing. But I think it has got more to do with the creativity and the stock and the professionalism that the nationals have brought to retail. They are all employing people from big high street organizations to run their retail now, because they can see that getting that right, bringing that professionalism, using inspiration of the collections to create product, I think that is what has driven the retail success of museum shops. And it's they're one of the few bright spots in retail in the UK. I don't know if this is the same in Spain, but our high streets in the UK are really struggling. And not least because of eBay and Amazon. Shops in museums and galleries, I would say, are flourishing, really. And I think they're some of the best retail experiences that you can have. The second bit of the question, so I think that's why they're doing so well. not so much because the museums are free. I think the second point was, could you replace by donations? And are there free donations compensating for free admission? Well, I don't think they are, but I just find it a bit of a fraud, really. I find it uncomfortable that when I go into certain national museums and I'm accosted about, would you like to donate? Would you like to buy this map? It's £5. You'll get lost without it. I find that uncomfortable, and I think we would say it's disingenuous. It's not up front, and I don't think, even if it does compensate to an extent, and it will a bit, I find that transaction a very strange one, and I'm uncomfortable with it, and I don't think it's the right way to engage with people. I really don't think it is. I think it's slightly sneaky, really, and I don't like it. Really, I think people should be brave enough to charge or not, but not that kind of sneaky halfway house. I don't like it.
How are we doing for time, Antonio? You're going to have an hour for your coffee break. Anything else? I'm only here for another 2 hours. Nothing. No. Oh, yes. Thank you. Am I going to need this?
Hello. I was interested in the annual pass you talked about earlier. I was thinking that perhaps at your museum you have it. I would like to know what is the impact of the annual pass on the revenue of the museum. And another thing about that is, do you think that really the community uses it and really uses it for the whole year? Or is it just, something that people have and don't use much?
Yeah. So you could... You could wonder about, couldn't you, the economics of having an annual pass and lots of people coming back essentially free compared to just selling them a ticket every time. Lots of reasons, I think. We factor into our business model that we will get lots of repeat visits and that we won't earn so much from them. But what we are finding is that that's contributing to a rise in attendance. And actually, the other thing that has happened that has benefited our revenue, it has changed the mix of people that are coming. So we are finding that we're getting lots more people paying adult prices, And the mix, we're generating more yield per visitor. There's a change in the mix coming in. It's generating more families. It also has a very positive benefit on our secondary spend. So we have, 10 outlets in my museum where you could buy something. And they're all profitable. And their revenues have gone up, so it's had a very positive impact. But we take the balance between the tail off, because you're getting free people, against the rise in attendance. And I think you have to factor that into your financial forecasting. But once you understand the numbers and understand what's going on, you do that. And I think if, again, and I say this so many times, if you can establish a long-term relationship with your visitors by them coming back, even if it's only twice a year, then that's a good thing. This might make me sound like the devil, but it's what we would call in the UK the pyramid of engagement. And it's very much, I love the National Trust. I think they're an extraordinary organization, but they kind of use the pyramid of engagement. So at the bottom level, people might just know about you, not do anything about it, but know about you. They might look on your website. They might visit one of your properties. They might become a member. They might become a life member. And right at the top of the pyramid, they give you a legacy. When they die, they give you the legacy. And it's about, that really is a long-term relationship, isn't it, with visitors? But that's what it's about, really. Because I want people to feel that the museums are a natural part of their lives. That it isn't something that takes courage to come to or feels... I almost don't want them to feel it's special. I want them to feel it's normal and that we are for them, really. And I think, you know, you need to say that to yourself quite a lot. We are for them, really. And so we take that balance between rising attendance through an annual pass with the diminished revenues that you might get if you didn't have it. And it seems to be working for us, and it seems to be working for many, many museums across the UK. And if you don't have an annual pass, or you're struggling with becoming the devil, think about an annual pass, actually. And don't charge anything more than you would normally. Just the normal price. Although, did you say it was €3 has been introduced? Yeah. €3? It's too cheap. Too cheap.
Sí, jo li voldria preguntar per l'estudi que vau fer i que està publicat, el Taking Charge, del 2016. És una pregunta molt professional des del punt de vista de l'Observatori de Públics. Quina resposta té per part dels centres que responen? O sigui, els interessa respondre aquest tipus de qüestions o us responen els professionals dels centres que ja estan farts de respondre enquestes i no, per favor, no volem una enquesta més? Hi ha retorn de les conclusions respecte als centres que han respost? Com funciona tot això? Perquè aquí hi ha una certa sensació de que no pots empipar massa ni en els museus ni a ningú fent moltes enquestes més perquè ja estan, diguéssim, molt plens de feina. Les plantilles són molt reduïdes i molt escasses i no tenen molt de temps per alguna feina que consideren que els hi reporta un guany molt escàs, no?
So I think you do need to charge what I would call an economic rate. I think it's no good charging and not being brave about the charge, really. And you need to almost, if you're going to start to charge, construct an entirely different business model for your museum. And but I think that there are two views in the UK, and through the research, there are some people who don't want to charge. They think that the collections are owned by the nation and that people should have free access in the same way maybe they have free access to a health service. And I kind of understand that, really. But I do feel that feels a little bit arrogant. And I think there's lots of things in life that I think are deserving of the public sector money and support. There are lots of things in the UK that don't get enough money, and I would like to see more money go towards them. And I don't. There's a sense of entitlement, I think, that goes on a little bit. But I think, and they didn't come into the museum sector to be worried about earning money for their institution. They came in for different motives. And so I think that is reflected in the research. But on the other hand, they can see that if you do construct a business model that allows you to invest, you can do a better job for your public. You can look after your collections better. You can maybe develop your collections. So I would urge, if you are thinking about, well, either way of going, starting to charge or going free, that it isn't a simple decision, and it needs to have a real think of the whole business model, really. And if you just simply start to charge without really thinking about your audiences and marketing, you will fail. And you will probably then forward just blame the charging. And that, I think, would be unfair. If you're charging for something, it's an entirely different business model and needs real thought. But I would say that in the UK and through the research, the movement is towards charging, really. Even there are some, they wouldn't say it in public, some of the national directors, but even they, when I talk to them, they would like to start to charge because they see big issues, particularly with their enormous buildings, with huge amounts of maintenance backlogs, costing tens and tens of millions of pounds. So there's a real mix, but I would say that the impetus, the energy is with charging. And that does come across in the research. And it's why I said, if you don't want to do it, don't do it. And there are clearly some people who don't want to do it. So you have to construct a business model that will work for you. Any other questions? Are we there? Are we there? Oh.
The majority of museums here in Catalonia are publicly budget sustained. Local authorities, regional government, etc. Do you see any contradiction between this public sustainment, the social engagement that this incorporates, and the museum acting in a market? Do you get the...
Yeah. You see, I don't think that acting in a market, operating in a market, means that you throw away your social purpose. I just don't think it's the case. I think that actually charging puts the visitor in charge, and it creates energy around doing the best that you can do. And I worry that if you don't charge, you can become apathetic, less energy to want to improve. And you probably do have less money to make improvements, really. So I don't see a conflict, actually. As I say, I'm a museum director. I don't want to be the director of a supermarket or an IT company. It doesn't interest me. And it's the great challenge and beauty, I think, of working for a cultural business or a heritage business, that you've got those two things. You've got to be have a business ethic and business disciplines, and yet you are working for the public and the visitors, and it just allows us to do that in the best way that we possibly can. So I don't think there is a conflict, actually.
Just one last question. It's actually not a question, it's just a comment, but because of all the things that you explained, one that I think is really interesting for all different sorts of museums is the idea of the dwell time. But that's something that's important for us. A lot of people who pay to be a friend, so an annual pass, are the people that come to the museum more than once a week, and end up spending 2 or 3 hours at the museum. And they later generate content that's really priceless for us. So a blog entry or an article sort of puts the museum in the public realm and discourse in a way that is really beneficial to us in the long term, but it's hard to study. So I think that's really interesting to think about the dwell time as we discuss things throughout the day. So thank you for that.
I think the dwell time is terribly important, and it's you're almost kind of, in the example you've just given there, handing over authority a bit, aren't you, to the visitors. And we have debates in my museum about, for example, so we are an open air museum, so we have lots and lots of buildings, and we're about to build lots of new ones. And we kind of have a debate, well, should we leave the interior for the visitors to actually finalize, so that it's their exhibition that they're creating? Or, for example, are you familiar with the concept of a speaker's corner? Yeah? So we're thinking about having one of those in a park in the museum, where people can talk about issues which are important to them, not scripted by the museum. And again, it's giving authority over to the visitors. And but I think dwell time is terribly important. I think it stops it being transient and becomes, they're diving deeper into you as an organization. They're giving more. And I think that can only be a good thing.